one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies take another series, this one from the Blue Jays in Toronto. It is their third straight series victory under Don Mattingly, and the Phillies have now won 10 series under Mattingly and lost just three. So the Phillies playing really good baseball, and the offense has woken up. I think it's official, man. The offense is finally here as the Phillies take two out of three from the defending American League champion Blue Jays. We'll get into that. A couple of injuries to tell you about. One happened in the game on Wednesday. The other happened as a player was ramping up trying to come back. And we are going to answer some of your Twitter and Blue Sky questions in a mailbag coming up here at the end of the podcast. So lots to get to here on this edition of Hittin' Season. But please, folks, if you haven't done so in a while, or if you've never done it, please leave a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts for the Hittin' Season podcast. It's hard to believe. I know it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it does help the podcast grow. It helps other people find the podcast who might not know about it otherwise. And so if you wouldn't mind doing that, I'd love to hear what you think about Hittin' Season now as we are in our 11th year doing this podcast, taking you through the ins and outs of this baseball team each and every week, three times a week. And of course, we are going to continue doing it forever. So I don't know about that. But anyway, for right now, leave a five-star rating and a review over at Apple Podcasts, but you can find us on all of the different podcast apps. We are on Spotify. We're on CastBox. We're on Overcast. Everything out there you can find Hittin' Season. So tell your family and friends about us and leave a five-star rating and a review. All right, let's talk about this series against the Blue Jays. The Phillies now 37-31 on the season, 28-12 under Don Mattingly. Forget they started 9-19 with Rob Thompson. They are 28-12 under Don Mattingly. And the game on Wednesday, just a good old-fashioned fun Phillies game. As the Phils win 7-4, they broke out to a 6-0 lead, managed to hold off a late Blue Jays uprising. I don't know if I'd call it a rally, but they had a 7-1 lead in the seventh inning, and the Blue Jays scored three runs. But you know, overall, the Phillies won this game comfortably. Phils get a good start from Jesus Luzardo. The up-and-down Jesus Luzardo came through with a good start. We saw the good Jesus Luzardo on Wednesday evening up in Toronto. It looked like he was going to go a little deeper into the game, but just really struggled with his command and being efficient with his pitches a little bit in this one. Went 5 2/3 innings, gave up just four hits, but also walked four batters, but gave up just one earned run. Struck out 8. The ERA now 4.35 on the season, improves his record to 5-4. The Phillies got some decent bullpen work from Jonathan Bolin, Brad Keller, Jose Alvarado. Chase Shugart made this thing a little bit closer, giving up 3 runs in the 7th inning. It was not a pretty inning for him. I think it was a single, walk, walk, walked in a run, and then gave up 2 sacrifice flies in order to get the game to 7-4. But the Phillies managed to hold on and win by that score. So a better outing from Jesus Luzardo, but he did struggle with his command. He did walk 4 batters, so he wasn't able to pitch deep into the game. But at this point, we will take it. We'll take it from Jesus Luzardo, who has been very up and down. He is still working on trying to get guys to hit his sinker into the ground, but did a better job of that here on Wednesday. And so overall, I think you'd have to look at it as a positive start from Luzardo. It was certainly a positive start by the offense. Bryce Harper got things off to a good start, went deep in the first inning with an opposite field home run off of Max Scherzer. And then Alec Bohm hits a big 3-run, 2-out home run in the third off of Scherzer, who is not the same pitcher that he used to be. He's no longer Hall of Famer Max Scherzer, but he's more number 5 type starter Max Scherzer. And he left a hanging breaking ball right down the middle of the plate that Alec Bohm put a beautiful swing on and destroyed the ball into left center field for a 4-0 lead. It was Bohm's 8th home run of the year. He didn't actually hit 8 home runs until July 4th last year. Bohm, by the way, now has a 907 OPS after that home run in the third inning since his 2-day reset in early May. Just swinging a much better bat. That two-day reset really did seem to help. His swing is much faster to the ball, and he's hitting underneath the ball a little bit more than he was at the start of the season when everything was smashed into the ground. Now, one guy who doesn't have a problem elevating the baseball is Kyle Schwarber, who hit his 24th home run of the season. That leads Major League Baseball. Yordan Alvarez has 22. He is next closest, but he leads by 5 home runs in the National League race. Matt Olson of the Braves is next closest with 19 home runs in the National League. So Kyle Schwarber is pacing the National League with 24 home runs, and this was another rocket, a missile over to the right, over the right center field fence. No doubt about it. Hit it off a left-hander. Beautiful thing to see. It took a 4-0 lead, made it 6-0 for the Phillies, and that's when you really kind of knew that the Phillies had this game in hand. Now, the Phillies did run into a little bit of a problem in right field in this game. On the second of Chase Shugart's 2 sacrifice flies in the 7th, Garcia threw a bullet to home that almost, he had no business trying to get this runner out, but he made it a close play. And we all know Garcia has one of the best arms in baseball, but he, I think, threw his arm out on this one. He left the game with an arm injury. We don't know the details of it just yet or how long he's going to be out, but this did not look like this was going to be a 1 or 2 day thing. I hope I'm wrong. Maybe we're wrong about that. But as I sit here recording late on Wednesday night, actually very early Thursday morning, I think this looks like it's going to be an IL stint for Adolis Garcia. Hopefully not too long, even though Garcia has not had a very good season this year. He has been heating up at the plate a little bit. We have been seeing a little bit more power, and he is an excellent defensive right fielder. But this will, I think, force the Phillies to call up an outfielder from AAA. There are 3 outfielders that make sense, guys who are already on the 40-man roster. We've seen a couple of these guys already this year. Otto Kemp would be one of them. I would be more intrigued to see Felix Reyes finally get a chance to play every day. Now, he's not hitting all that well in Lehigh Valley since he was sent back down. He's hitting some home runs, but not doing a whole lot else. But I think Reyes has more upside than Kemp does, and I would be interested in seeing Reyes playing in right field more often than I would be Otto Kemp. But you also could see the Phillies call up Gabriel Rincones Jr. Now, Rincones is a left-handed hitter. They would be missing a right-handed bat if they did not go with Kemp or Reyes. I don't know how big a deal that is. I want the guy who is the best hitter. I don't really care if he hits right-handed or left-handed. Neither Kemp nor Reyes has hit very well down in Lehigh Valley of late. Reyes did hit a home run on Wednesday night, so maybe he has a little bit of a power stroke going. I mean, I don't know that the numbers are going to be a whole lot worse than what Adolis Garcia's numbers were. So I would love to see Reyes be the guy and to get a week straight, 2 weeks straight of playing, if indeed Adolis Garcia is going to have to go on the injured list, which is what I think is probably going to end up happening. But we'll see. Joan Duran bounces back from his first blown save on Tuesday. We'll talk more about that in just a second. But gets his 17th save of the season with a scoreless 9th inning. He did give up 2 hits in the 9th, but he worked around them and is now 17 for 18 on the season, a 1.99 ERA for Joan Duran, one of the best closers in the National League. Now, a little bit of debate about Duran and his usage. Don Mattingly is using him in a much more aggressive way than Rob Thompson would be. Rob Thompson never used a reliever on 3 straight days, and he really maximized rest for these guys, for his bullpen guys. You would never have seen him use the same closer 3 nights in a row. You would have never seen him use the same closer 4 times in 5 games, but that is what Don Mattingly has done with Joan Duran. For the 3rd game in a row, he came in. It was his 4th appearance in 5 games, and it didn't look like this was going to be a save situation until Chase Shugart got involved in the 7th, but it was a 3-run lead, so it was a save situation for Joan Duran. And there's a couple arguments to be made here. Is he using him too much? Joan Duran throws over 100 miles an hour. He's got a couple of really nasty breaking pitches. Like most closers, most relievers nowadays, it's a max effort every pitch. Joan Duran is going max effort on every pitch. That's what he does. That's why he throws 101, 102. And that's why the slider and why the sinker are both so effective is because he is throwing that baseball as hard as he can. Now, closers didn't used to do that all the time. You used to have guys who threw a lot of sinkers and, you know, were throwing 95, 96, but not necessarily 100, 101, 102. So there is a little concern with using a guy like Jhoan Duran, max effort every single pitch as often as Don Mattingly is using him. Even if it doesn't result in an injury, you worry about fatigue as the season goes along. The other side of that coin, though, is that this is how it used to be for closers. And I don't care if it's max effort or not. Like, Jhoan Duran is one of your very best players, right? I mean, you gave up huge capital for him. And when you've got an opportunity to win a baseball game and you fell behind as much as the Phillies did earlier in the season, you can't afford to throw away a game that you could potentially win, especially since Luzardo didn't go deep and you had to use some other arms. Once that became a safe situation, the choice for Don Mattingly, I guess, was obvious. He was going back to Jhoan Duran for the third game in a row and for the fourth time in five games. I like it. I hope it doesn't blow up in their faces. I hope that Duran is able to stay healthy, that I don't want this to necessarily be a habit where this is happening all the time, but because I do think there is a danger, but he may be just as likely to get injured by not pitching for 2 days after pitching 2 days in a row and then coming back on that after those 2 days of rest. You know, I think Duran knows himself best. I think the Phillies know him best. They would not be doing anything to hurt him, I don't believe, or even taking the risk that they could hurt him. So I'm all for it. I am all for using your best players as often as you can. And Jhoan Duran, the Phillies have not had a closer like him really ever. You know, you had Carlos Estevez for a couple of months at the trade after the trade deadline in 2024. That was short-lived. Before that, in 22 and 23, you had a whole mix of different guys. You didn't have a single closer. You did have Duran for the last couple of months of 25. But again, Rob Thompson never pitched him in three straight games, back-to-back-to-back days, and four times in 5 days. I don't think we would have seen him. If Rob Thompson is managing this game, we do not see Jhoan Duran in it. We just don't. The Phillies probably win that game with Jose Alvarado, you know, or Brad Keller or somebody else? Yeah, they probably do. It's a 3-run lead. You feel pretty good about that. But Don Mattingly wants to win these baseball games, and Duran is your closer. And if he says he's ready to go, then put him out there. And the Phillies, you know, knowing that the Phillies have an off day on Thursday, there's no chance of him pitching on Thursday. So they go to Milwaukee for a big series against the Brewers over the weekend. Obviously, if there are safe situations to be had in Milwaukee, I think Duran's going to get all those too. I think it's the right call. I hope we're not wrong. And we see Jhoan Duran suffer from fatigue or something worse as the season goes along. But you can't be worried about everything. Sometimes it just comes down to being as simple as, unless the pitcher is telling you he shouldn't do it, or he's telling you that there's some pain or there's some discomfort or whatever, if he says he can do it and the stuff looks good, do it. Pitch him, get him out there and win the ball game. On Tuesday, the Phillies lost 3-2, pardon me. It looked like they were going to win that game. It was 1-1 going into the ninth inning. Bryson Stott hits a double down the left field line off of a Blue Jays reliever who has been pretty much unhittable all season long. It was a tremendous piece of hitting. Luis Varland of the Blue Jays just has electric stuff. A 0.50 ERA on the season for him in 32 games, a 0.98 whip. He has just had an unbelievable season here for the Toronto Blue Jays. He was very good last season, a 2.97 ERA for two different teams last year. But for Toronto this year is turning into one of the great relievers in baseball. He is their closer, 11 saves on the season for Luis Varland. But Bryson Stott hits a double down the left field line to give the Phillies a 2-1 lead in the ninth. But Jhoan Duran could not lock down a one-run save. It was really kind of an odd outing. He gave up an infield single, then a ground ball single through the hole into right field that allowed the runner to go to third, and then Juan Duran just, you know, has trouble holding runners on. A lot of stolen base, so it's second and third, nobody out. You have the winning run on second, the tying run on third. Duran uncorks a wild pitch, which ties the game and then moves the winning run to third with nobody out, and he gives up a line drive single, and that is the ball game. And I was asking, was he bidding, even after the game on Tuesday night, was he getting a little bit overused? And then they went and used him again on Wednesday. So I guess the answer is no, that's not really the reason why it all went down. But he had been perfect up to that point. 16 for 16 on the season, which just makes Brad Lidge's perfect season in 2008, both an incredible mix of luck and skill from Lidge and the defenders on that team, and but also getting lucky, you know, balls trickling through holes and all that kind of stuff. You can't really plan for that. So Duran blows his first save of the season. Phillies lose 3-2. Zach Wheeler threw great again in the game on Tuesday. 6 innings, 6 hits, 1 run, no walks, 5 strikeouts, a 2.22 ERA on the season. I wrote an article for The Good Fight on Wednesday. I was skeptical that Zach Wheeler would be able to crack the National League All-Star team, and it still is going to be a tough duty in order to do that. But he keeps putting up starts like that. He's going to work himself onto that team. I mean, he's on the bubble right now as it is. A 2.22 ERA in any other season in 9 starts is enough to make you a leading candidate to start the game. But the National League Cy Young race and the National League All-Star roster is just going to be absolutely stacked this year. And so Zach Wheeler is kind of in that mix. And I think there's a good chance he makes the All-Star game. And he certainly will if he continues to pitch like he did on Tuesday night. And let me give a little shout out to Orion Kerkering, who is pitching phenomenal baseball right now. He got 4 outs in the game on Tuesday, struck out 2. His ERA on the season now 2.10. Talk about bouncing back from what happened last year in Los Angeles, where he just a crushing moment for him, and he's put it behind him, and he's pitching great baseball right now in this bullpen. He's probably, I would go to Orion Kerkering over Brad Keller right now in a clutch situation. That's just bottom line. And Kerkering's stuff is better. He's getting more guys out. Keller's just allowing too many base runners, managing to escape damage most of the time. But Ryan Kerkering's been the better reliever for the Phillies right now, and he probably should be the bridge to Duran, at least from the right side. And then on Monday, the Phillies won 5-2. Christopher Sanchez gives up 2 runs in the game. 7 innings, 4 hits. He gave up 2 runs. What a loser. The decline is real. It's happening. I mean, a guy who throws 50 and 2/3 scoreless innings now all of a sudden has given up 2 runs in 7 innings. I mean, if you extrapolate that, he's going to be giving up 20 runs a game by the end of the season. This is unsustainable. Sure, tell me about his 10 strikeouts and 1 walk in this game. His ERA went up, guys, to 1.54. It's all the numbers are trending in the wrong direction. I don't know what we're going to do with our Christopher Sanchez problem, everyone. It's a big deal for the guy who's going to probably start the National League All-Star game. Great outing from Christopher Sanchez yet again. Baffling a lineup with that changeup. And then you had Adolis Garcia hit a home run, his 7th of the season in the first game. Bohm, Realmuto, and Stott all had RBIs in a very standard business-like 5-2 win on Monday. So again, the Phillies take 2 out of 3 from the Blue Jays in Toronto, who are struggling. I mean, that's just it's kind of amazing to watch how much they're struggling right now. But 33-36 on the season, 3 games under 500 for the Blue Jays, and we kind of saw it. The pitching has really been a problem for them during the course of this year. So I don't know if the Blue Jays are going to be able to kind of get on the right track, but the Phillies took advantage of it in Toronto. All right, so I told you about the Adolis Garcia injury and what the Phillies might do about that. Johan Rojas could have been an option for the Phillies to call up in the next couple of weeks. He is serving, of course, an 80-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. The Phillies have played 68 games, so he's about 12 games away from being able to rejoin the team. However, and this is ironic, he also suffered an injury in his throwing arm as he was ramping up to return to the field following the 80-game suspension. He has torn the UCL of his throwing arm. This is Johan Rojas, not Adolis Garcia. Johan Rojas tears the UCL of his throwing arm as he's getting ready to try and return to the field, and he will miss the rest of the season. They do expect him to be ready for spring training in 2027. But yeah, very weird. Two Phillies outfielders, right-handed Phillies outfielders, hurt themselves throwing here over the last couple of days. So, just a bizarre coincidence there with Johan Rojas and Adolis Garcia. All right, I told you we'd head to the mailbag and spend a little time dipping into the mail and getting your questions on the Phils and Major League Baseball right now. So let's start off with the X mailbag, and then we'll move over to the Blue Sky. On X, at @Ed_McLaughlin asks, we know a righty bat and another starter are top needs, but a leverage lefty reliever is probably number three on the trade deadline needs. With around a month and a half to the deadline, who are some lefty relievers not named Aroldis Chapman that I think should be targeted, that you think should be targeted, is what he says. All right, so I was doing a little bit of digging, and if we're not going to talk about Aroldis Chapman, which I get it, it probably cost a little bit too much to go get him, I'll start with least likely to most likely. I think Josh Hader is a name who could very well get moved. He is in year three of a five-year, $95 million contract. Now, he has been hurt for most of this year. He's just now returning from biceps tendonitis. He's also 32 years old, so he's starting to get up there a little bit, but Aroldis Chapman is, 55, so I don't know that age is necessarily a big deal. It's more about health than how old Josh Hader is. So you might pump the brakes there, but it also might limit what could get asked, what a team might ask for him in terms of prospect return because of the injury, because of his age, and because he still has, 2.5 years of a five-year, $95 million contract left on him. Now, his 41% strikeout percentage is the highest in league history. He's still one of the five best relievers in baseball when he's healthy. So you're talking about a leverage reliever. He's not going to be a guy who closes for you, probably, but he is another leverage reliever that you could turn to. Another name that you could see moved is Colorado Rockies reliever Brennan Bernardino. His ERA is in the mid threes right now. He's actually pitched better in Coors than he has away from home. Now, he's not a hard thrower. He only throws about 90 miles an hour, but he's in the 99th percentile in hard hit rate, and he doesn't walk anybody. So he's not a big strikeout guy, but he throws strikes. He doesn't allow pitchers to square him up. He only makes $925,000. He's under club control until 2030. So there's a guy that you could see maybe put on the block if the Rockies felt like they could get something decent for him. And I'll throw out another kind of soft-tossing left-hander, John King of the Marlins. Again, he only throws about 90 miles an hour, but he's putting up a ground ball rate of over 50%, only a 30% hard hit rate. I think those are probably things that, again, if you're looking for a lefty reliever, those are the types of numbers that you want to see. He's also making just $1.5 million this year. So certainly some alternatives there. And you could look at the Mets' David Peterson, who is transitioning between starting and relieving, but he's got a 1.88 ERA in the bullpen, and he's going to be a free agent. Would the Mets swing a trade for him? I don't know. They might. Would the Mets trade him to the Phillies? Would they do a deal? The Mets and the Phillies have made deals before. At the trade deadline, we've seen it in the past, but Asdrubal Cabrera, the most famous among them, probably. I think if we're thinking of recent history, that one didn't work out so well, but maybe this one work a little better. I'll give you one other name too, and it's a name you're going to recognize. Our old pal Jojo Romero. Jeff Passan of ESPN writes that Romero will almost certainly be moved by the Cardinals. I know the Cardinals have the top wild card spot right now, but Romero is going to be a free agent after this year, and it's likely the Cardinals would want to get something for him. He has a 3.54 ERA this year in 28 outings, 28 strikeouts and 11 walks. He was phenomenal last year. A 2.07 ERA for the left-hander. And going back to 2023, his ERAs are 3.68, 3.36, 2.07 last year and 3.54 this year. You'll remember Jojo Romero went to St. Louis in the Edmundo Sosa trade. So talk about a deal that worked out well for both teams. St. Louis has gotten a very solid reliever the last 4 years, and Edmundo Sosa has been a very solid utility infielder for the Phillies. But those are just some names if you're looking at left-handed relievers that I think you're going to be hearing connected to the Phillies here over the next few weeks, but I think it's a good call that the Phillies could be looking at another left-handed leverage reliever outside of Jose Alvarado and Tanner Banks. Maybe getting another one of those guys into the fold would be a good thing. All right, at SRG Designer 412, he asks, pitching wasn't the problem the last 3 years. We don't need Tarek Skubal. If they want pitching, go for Nathan Eovaldi or Sonny Gray. My question, if they want the big bat, it needs to be Mike Trout, Byron Buxton, or maybe a switch hitter like Adley Rutschman or Ketel Marte. Thoughts? I don't think the Phillies have a chance to get any one of those players that you just mentioned. They're not going to spend... First of all, I don't know that they have the prospects to pull off a trade like that anymore, unless you're willing to move Andrew Painter, which I would be. I would be, not because I'm giving up on him, but because I think we're seeing that there's no such thing as a surefire prospect. And if Andrew Painter gets you Byron Buxton or Adley Rutschman or Ketel Marte, I don't know if I'd do it for Marte, but I would definitely do it for Buxton. I would definitely do it for Rutschman, for sure. I would move Andrew Painter for one of those guys. And you could maybe talk me into Marte, although Marte has some attitude issues, which I just don't know that you want in the clubhouse. But Byron Buxton would be the dream. He'd be the absolute dream. He's having another phenomenal year for Minnesota. Of all the bats that the Phillies could pursue, Byron Buxton would be the one. But I don't think Minnesota wants to trade Buxton. I don't know why. They just want to hold on to him for forever. He's going to play every game of his career with the Minnesota Twins, and he's going to retire a Twin, and that's going to be great, but he's not going to sniff the playoffs ever again. So I think that's the guy that I would want to go get. I think he would make a huge difference in this lineup, but I think the chances of the Phillies landing any one of those guys is very remote. I think, once again, you're shopping at Taylor Ward. Right? I mean, it sounds like a department store, but you're probably shopping at Taylor Ward. You're probably going to take a stroll over to Joe Adell Lane and see what's cooking there. Like Randall Grichuk is a guy that we saw over the last week. He's a guy that I think you could see come to Philadelphia. Somebody who can hit left-handed pitching, who isn't going to cost you very much. All of those guys I just mentioned a second ago are guys who I think are within the realm of possibility. I don't think Trout, Buxton, Rutschman, or Marte are anywhere close to in the realm of possibility. At Jiggin Jalen asks, the Phillies are 2-8 in their last 10 playoff games and haven't won a series since 2023. They also entered the season each year with the same problems as the year before. Is this Dave Dombrowski's last season with the organization? That's a good question. I don't know. We don't know what Dave Dombrowski's contract is with the Phillies and John Middleton. That's never been made public, so I don't know. If he has another 3 years on his contract, the answer is probably no. I don't think the Phillies will ever fire Dave Dombrowski. Okay, they could lose in the first round of the playoffs every single year for like the next 5 to 10 years. They're never going to fire Dave Dombrowski. That being said, when will Dave decide he wants to step away? When will he decide that he's had enough? If the Phillies win the World Series this year, could I see him hanging it up? Yes, I could see Dave Dombrowski leaving. Maybe even if they get back to the World Series again, he might go. I don't think he's going to leave if they fall short in the playoffs again. I think it's going to infuriate everyone if he comes back. And if the same problems in the playoffs persist, and he had these two off seasons to try and fix what were glaring holes in the offense and was not able to do it. I think he might have had intentions to try, but was not able to get it done. So is this Dave's last season with the organization? My gut tells me it's not, but without knowing his contract situation, it's impossible to say. But I don't think a loss in the playoffs this October hastens his departure. I do think winning it all might allow Dombrowski to say, you know what, I'm going to go out on top. I'm going to turn things over to Preston Mattingly, and I'm going to move into a senior position in the organization, or I'm going to move back to Nashville and try and get an expansion team to Tennessee. At SW Schmidt 61 asks, do you think if Aiden Miller was healthy, they would have traded Alec Bohm before the deadline? I'm assuming you mean before this year's deadline. If Bohm had continued to struggle and Miller was healthy, yes, absolutely 100%. They would have moved on from Alec Bohm and called up Aiden Miller. But obviously, that is not the situation that we're dealing with right now. Thankfully, Bohm has started to hit so much better. It's amazing. If he could end this thing that he has where he's absolutely unplayable for a month and a half at a time and was just a little bit more consistent, we wouldn't be having any conversations about Alec Bohm whatsoever. It's just his hots and his colds are just so extreme. It's like he's Mars, right? If you're in the sun, you're going to boil up. If you're in the shade, you're going to freeze to death. That's really what he's like. So, if Miller was healthy, we'd certainly be having a very interesting conversation. I don't know that Bohm would have been given this opportunity to rest for a couple of days and then try again. But Aiden Miller's not healthy. He's got his bad back and he's not ready to return to baseball activities. And thankfully, Alec Bohm is heating up and has performed very well going back to early May. So it's a moot question, moot point. It's a good intellectual exercise, though, so I appreciate the question. And then last question from the X mailbag at Lightning6280 asks, will a righty bat really be able to fix this offense? That's a great question. Can Byron Buxton fix this offense? I think he can. Could Mike Trout do it? Probably not. I don't think Ketel Marte or Adley Rutschman automatically fixes the offense all by themselves. I do think with this offense, things have obviously improved as of late. They scored 7 more runs in the game against the Blue Jays, the finale on Wednesday night. They've scored 46 runs in the last 9 games in June and are batting .258 in the month of June. They've also hit 14 home runs this month. That is 5th best in baseball so far here in the month of June. So the Phillies are scoring more runs. Does that mean everything's fixed? No, of course not. And they are going to need to add a bat. We'll see what happens with Adolis Garcia's injury. I don't think we're going to see a big increase in production from JT Realmuto, but Bryson Stott is hitting the ball much better right now. Alec Bohm is hitting the ball much better right now. You've got Brandon Marsh, you've got Schwarber, you've got Harper. Justin Crawford continues to be in the 9-hole and continues to not hit very well, but he's kind of giving you what you can get from him right now and hope that he improves during the course of the year. I would love to see them grab another 2 guys, and I think maybe you need to add a couple of guys to this offense in order to give yourself a little bit more length, a little bit more depth. This Phillies team is built on stars, and going out and getting Byron Buxton would be getting yourself another star that does help lengthen the lineup. So that's why I think Buxton would be the ideal choice. I think he does more than the other possibilities, quote unquote, fix this offense. But you're right. Like, does Mike Trout fix the offense? Probably not. Does Marte? Does Rutschman? Yeah, probably. They probably don't fix the offense. I think the right righty bat, I think, could fix the offense, but it's more than likely just going to take a couple of different guys. And for the existing players the mid-tier of Phillies position players to continue their better offensive baseball, their better at-bats and continue what they've been doing here against the Blue Jays in this series here and in the previous series, where they hit the ball really well against the White Sox and scored a bunch of runs. All right, on Blue Sky at Forbes X asks, why doesn't JT Realmuto challenge more pitches? He missed 2 in just 1 at bat on Wednesday that would have gotten Luzardo out of the inning. I don't know. It's a great question. He ranks eighth among all catchers in terms of overturns versus expected. His 81% success rate is third best among 51 catchers with at least 20 challenges. But he's only made 26 challenges. That's 38th most among major league catchers. So I suppose the argument can be made to challenge more often, because when he challenges, he's generally speaking correct. But I think he's a little risk averse. He doesn't want to risk being wrong, especially early in the game, and then not have a challenge in his pocket in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning in a high leverage situation. So yes, he may have made one of Jesus Luzardo's innings a little bit longer in the third or the fourth inning, but it seems pretty clear Realmuto is only challenging pitches when he's sure, and he's really only doing it in times, if it's a borderline call, when the game's a little bit later and there's a little bit more on the line. But he should challenge a little bit more. I agree. Given his success, I think JT Realmuto should be doing more automatic ball strike challenges than he has been. Last question at Bedlam Match CBP asks, how many strikeouts will Jacob Mizorowski rack up against the Phillies this weekend? Or will they get to him like they did to Paul Skeens? And the Phillies have never really hit around Paul Skeens. All right. On Friday, this is not a game, although you could have a reverse lock situation, but this is not a game I would necessarily pencil in as a Phillies W, because you have Andrew Painter with his 1-7 record and 6.21 ERA going up against Mizorowski, who is 7-2 with a 1.50 ERA. Could it be a Mick Abel versus Paul Skeens type performance that we see on Friday night in Milwaukee? Possibly. It sure as heck isn't probable. And yes, I do think Mizorowski will probably rack up. I'll put the over under at 11.5 strikeouts. I'll take the over. I think the Phillies strike out like 12 times in this game, 12 times in seven innings or something like that. I do not expect Andrew Painter to be able to match Mizorowski pitch for pitch. And no one's expecting him to. But we've got to see some improvement from Andrew Painter. The problem is this Brewers team is one of the best teams in the National League, 41-25 after play on Wednesday. It will be a huge challenge for the Phillies to win another series for Don Mattingly on Friday afternoon. I don't want to say they can't do it, obviously, but it's going to be very, very difficult. So yes, I do expect Mizorowski to make life miserable for the Phillies on Friday evening. All right, and Guy, I really appreciate all the mailbag questions this week. It helps make the content machine churn a little bit easier here on the Hitting Season podcast, and get us some things to talk about. So really do appreciate everybody chiming in with some questions on X and on Blue Sky. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hitting Season. Justin and Liz will be with you at the end of the week to preview this big series and up against the Brewers, and they'll have all the latest news and notes and rumors about the Phils as they're getting ready to set things up on Friday for their conversation. So make sure to keep an eye out for that. I want to encourage you also to check out the Hitting Season Patreon. Justin Clue has some great co-hosts and some great podcasts over there. The Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered are must-listen-tos. So if you would love to help out the podcast, you can go over to the Patreon, subscribe to that, and you can get some extra special Phillies podcasts there as well. And also want to encourage you guys to check out the WHYY YouTube channel. WHYY is a terrific partner with us. We love being partners with them. And so we are encouraging you all to check out their page, because that's where you can find our roundtable episodes of the podcast. We had technical problems on Monday morning, and we're not able to record video of the latest roundtable. So you won't find our roundtable edition from this past week there, but all the other ones are there. So hopefully if there's anything you want to catch from a couple of weeks ago, you're just catching up, you can find all of our stuff there. Again, please tell your friends, your family members about Hitting Season on all of the audio podcast platforms. We're everywhere. Everywhere you can listen to podcasts, that's where we are. So help your friends. Put it into their phone for them so they can listen to Hitting Season too. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hitting Season.